Hi, this is Brigitte Mouchet with the Solari Wellness Series. I have the great pleasure to interview today Chiran Sardar, a DNA scientist. Chiran joins me from the UK. Chiran is a DNA scientist working in the revolutionary new field of epigenetics. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in microbiology and a Master of Science in human genetics. After that, she worked in the field of genetics for 13 years, identifying genetic mutations for a whole host of genetic diseases and contributed to many scientific papers as well as textbooks. Now she combines the three pillars of science, spirituality, and ancient wisdom to bring about a shift in DNA expression that reflects health and well-being. She's currently also undertaking a PhD in integrative medicine on directed consciousness to alter DNA expression. She's an author and has a passion to create animated videos to explain in a simple way concepts such as epigenetics, which you can find on her YouTube channel. Today, we are going to talk about epigenetics and how we can change our DNA, body, and lives with a pretty simple method. Chiran, welcome to the Solari Wellness Series.
Hi, Brigitte. Thank you so much for having me here. It's a real pleasure, and I love your audience and everything that they stand for. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So I just watched your video, Bursting the Bubble on Genes, that I recommended to our listeners to watch as an introduction for this interview. I think it's really the perfect introduction for our discussion today, and I hope most listeners did watch that video. So let's start. Let's start with maybe the science part of your background first. So you studied genetics. What was the most significant piece of information you learned while you were studying genetics? Do you remember?
Well, just before I even answer that, I'll go back to the video because I wanted to let people know, the listeners, how that video came about. I actually had a lot of information that I wanted to share with people. My passion really is to help people get things in a simple way. So I had an idea to actually start creating animations, and it really helped me to put the information all about, you know, what is epigenetics in a very simple format. So I've had people come back to me and say that, you know, their children watched it and got it. So if people haven't watched it, I really encourage you to go watch it because it's fun and it's simple.
Yeah.
Coming back to your question about, was there one thing that I learned with genetics? The fact that Watson and Crick discovered DNA. And to me, that was so exciting because I've always had this passion to know more about, you know, the mysteries of life, the magical aspect of how we were created and the science behind it and putting it all together. That started the journey to where I am today.
Yeah, that's a powerful realization. And I'm glad you chose that field. And then why did you choose to study epigenetics after that? Is that a common path for geneticists?
No, it's not common. It's very uncommon, actually. But what happened is that when I was younger, I think I was 11, when the AIDS epidemic came out, and at that time, the way that people were being discriminated for having AIDS, kind of fueled the passion in me to find something that would help people come out of situations where they were feeling a victim. So that did lead me to becoming a geneticist and then, you know, working 13 years in the laboratory with DNA. And then going on to becoming an epigeneticist. All my working life, I was working with genetic disorders and all of this. But at the same time, I gave birth to my son, who was diagnosed with eczema at 3 months old. And I went down the normal routes of the sort of medication and all of that that I was recommended. But I was noticing that nothing was helping. And then if I just to go back a step further, what, you know, is that when I was a child, I was always taught meditation and how to do yoga. That was kind of my background. So from that, when my son had that issue show up, and I realized that none of the medical stuff was actually helping, it would, you know, alleviate things a little bit, but not completely, and then come back. And so I began to study different modes of energy healing, looking into hypnotherapy. I even trained as a clinical hypnotherapist during that time. And so what I didn't realize was that at that point is that my son was really a gift in a way with his condition. He was a gift anyway, but his condition was a gift to allow me to start studying and moving towards this, even though I was working in the science-based, you know, area. Sort of 13 years in, I was continuing to study all that. At that point, my contract came to an end at the hospital, and it was almost as if, you know, I was being led to the next area of my life, which was fueled again by that passion that I had at 11 years old. And, you know, every stage was happening on its own. So at that point, I was given a book, Bruce Lipton's book, Biology of Belief. And that book, if anybody hasn't read it, I highly recommend it. But that book actually brought together full circle for me everything that I'd learned as an academic, in that it put the information of the cellular biology together in such a way to show me that actually we aren't victims to our biology, and we're not victims to the DNA. So here was me, you know, at 11 years old, wanting to help people come out of situations bringing about them being a victim in their life. And then here was this book that sort of summarized how we aren't victims to our biology or our life, all based on science. And it was phenomenal, because that completely changed everything. And then I began to start looking for ways to bring and help people with this information. So I'm going to go ahead of what your question actually asked, but that was what happened with the epigenetics and how I came to where I was.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's always, yeah, it's very often a personal story that guides you through your life's work, right?
Yeah, totally.
So would it make sense at this point to go back to genetics 101 and see if there is some basic science that we all need to know about this topic so that everybody is able to follow the discussion?
Absolutely, yeah. So basically, genetics 101, you know, Watson and Crick, when they discovered the DNA, they said that this was the source of life. And it was very much based on Newtonian science, which is that there's something in matter that creates something else. So it's matter to matter. You know, this is the most fabulous discovery. We're going to be changing lives. We're going to be, you know, all of this. And then the Human Genome Project came about later on, because they said, you know, if we can find the genes and for each condition, we should be able to do all these other tests and do genetic engineering and change things and you know, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a big hype, you know, with when the DNA was found in that sense, and led to so much more in the years to come after that. But it was all based on the fact that DNA was the source of life. And when we have DNA, it goes from DNA to protein. So protein then creates our physical makeup, you know, everything that we're made up of. So that's where things kind of go slightly awry, if you want to, how do I say that, awry. It sort of goes that way, because if somebody has a genetic condition, if there's heart disease in the family, or say diabetes, you know, any of these chronic conditions, then the person will be like, well, I can't do anything about this. Or it doesn't matter if I exercise, I'm still going to get this. That in itself is that victim mentality. And with this way of genetics, it's very difficult for people to come away with that feeling empowered. Instead, it feels very disempowering. So that's genetics 101. And the shift happens when we go from that to epigenetics.
Yeah, and so there, can you talk a little bit about some scientific evidence that epigenetics is real?
Well, yeah, definitely. But, you know, before we even go there, I'll probably talk about epigenetics 101.
Yeah.
Epigenetics, the word, the prefix, epi means above the DNA. So there's stuff influencing the DNA other than the DNA. So if there's a genetic mutation or mutations that can, you know, resulting in, say, diabetes or any chronic condition, with epigenetics, it's saying something else. Now, when they did the Human Genome Project, they were expecting to find that one protein would equal one gene, that there would be a particular gene responsible for creating that protein. But they didn't find that at all. In fact, what epigenetics has shown is that every gene can be transcribed 30,000 different ways. So each gene can create 30,000 different proteins. There's different signals that go to the DNA to create the different proteins. So then that's where epigenetics comes in. It's above the DNA. There's something controlling these genes being read in a different way. And that's where epi comes in. Then we begin to ask the question, so what is it that is influencing this? And on a physical level, there are certain things. Histones. In the scientific research, people have been finding this. It's these histones, basically, that the DNA wraps around. It's a protein that the DNA wraps around. And if it's wrapped around, then that will create a different gene expression. There's also methylation, which is where we have methyl groups attached to the DNA at certain points. And what this does is it changes the DNA expression again. So if you have different methylation sequences around the DNA, you'll create different genetic expression. So that's on the physical level. But if we think about it, really, what's telling those histones to wrap certain DNA around? What's telling the DNA to methylate in certain areas and not in certain areas? There's something else that's beyond that. And this is where we go into the field of quantum physics. and go into sort of the energetic aspects of our being. And before I even go to the research, you know, it's important to get this information. With the old way, it was DNA to RNA to protein. And, you know, that's the, it's called the downward causation method. Whereas when we start looking at what is influencing the DNA, we get the upward causation, which is basically that there's consciousness, which is the supramental level. And then we have the vital body, we have the mental body, and then we have the physical body. So there's this upward causation of looking at how we as an entity, each one of us as an entity, fits in with the universal scheme of things. So the old way is where you're just an individual, you're like one entity just moving around, not attached to anything, nothing influences you, you're just that. The other is that we've got to look at the whole being, and that includes how it's connected to the whole of consciousness, the universal life force energy that's, you know, running the planets and, you know, growing a seed into a flower. You know, all of this exists inside of us. There's a source that is there and ever present that's allowing us to be the way we are and, you know, allowing us to show up in that way. It's like, you know, a baby in the womb. You know, a mom can't say, well, okay, now it's time for the toes to form. It doesn't happen like that. It happens because there is this universal force that exists, and it just, it has its perfection, and it knows how to and when to create those toes. So this is the difference, and a very important difference, between the genetics and the epigenetics. And you can begin to see that, you know, the epigenetics becomes very connected and brings things together in a very big way. So coming to your question about the scientific research, there have been some studies, quite a few studies. One of them is mouse studies, where they were looking at how these mice, when they were exposed to the smell of cherry blossom, they were, you know, shocked at the same time. And so what they found was that it created anxiety. Every time they, you know, had the smell of the cherry blossom, it automatically created anxiety because they were sort of expecting that the shock. And so they reproduced these mice and created pups and grandpups. And what they found was that these pups and grandpups who hadn't been exposed to the two stimuli of the shock and the smell of cherry blossom together at all, when they were exposed to the smell of cherry blossom, reacted in the same way as their parents or grandparents, depending on whether it was the pups or the grandpups. So what they found was that this behavior got passed down from generation to generation. So there's something there that's actually influencing the DNA and being passed down and creating that response. So that was one study. More recently, with that particular study where that was reproduced, they wanted to see if they could reverse that in the grandpups. I can't remember for certain whether it was the pups or the grandpups they did that with. I'll have to look that up again, but they did some behavioral techniques and they were able to reverse that. So that was that study. There was another that was done in Northern Europe. And what they had there was a little town, a village, that had all the information of what these individuals that had lived many years ago had gone through. So they, you know, they had all these books that had documented everything. They had their age, they had everything that they'd experienced in those in their lives when they died. And what they found was that, you know, these individuals had experienced famine and drought. And looking at their grandchildren, they found that the predisposition for type 2 diabetes was increased in the individuals that had experienced famine or drought. So there was that connection made there as well. So that was one study. They've also looked at the women that were in their third trimester during 9/11. And what they found was that the children that were born from those women were found to have higher levels of cortisol, which then connected to later on developing chronic disease, whether it was heart disease or others. So these are a couple of studies really to show that.
Yeah, thank you. So let's go back to the example of a baby. When a baby is born, the baby comes with a certain DNA, right? And is that DNA going to change during that person's life, or is it really fixed and just the expression of the DNA is changing?
Well, that's a good question, because from what I've studied and looked at what others have studied, it's not the DNA that changes. It's more the expression that changes. Mm. I was in contact with a Russian scientist, Peter Gorev, and he's done a lot of studies, and we can talk about that in a bit. But he actually worked with a child that had a genetic condition. In fact, can I talk about that now?
Sure.
So, you know, we were talking about what influences the DNA. Well, this is extremely interesting because he has a device that he actually uses where he can actually take the energy, the frequency of some individual, and convert it into an MP3. And that MP3 then can be played by somebody else to change things. So what he did was he had a child, a patient that had a genetic condition, and the prognosis was she was going to die at around 6, I think. And she was, I can't remember, I think 4 or 5 when she came to him. So he took the frequency with his machine device of this child's cousin who was normal. Mm-hmm. And he converted that into an MP3 and gave it to the mom of this girl that was ill. And the mom actually played that, not sure how many times a day or what the protocol was, but she basically became well. And even though she had the genetic mutation still, because he looked to see if that had changed, it hadn't. She was just expressing things in a way that created wellness. So it's the fact that we have the ability to express the genes in so many different ways that allows us to change our health and well-being.
So if we go a little further, as a species, do you know or do you think that our DNA is changing right now? And if so, is it naturally occurring as part of evolution, or are the changes caused by our behaviors or by the environment? And can we even choose how we want to evolve?
So that's a very loaded question and a lot to say on that. Yeah. So I don't know if our DNA is changing right now, because I haven't done any genetic testing or have the ability to do that, you know, right now. And for that, we would need, you know, to look at a big population and all of that. So I don't know, and I haven't looked to see if anybody else has done that. But with regards to the second part of your question, are the changes caused by our behaviors or by the environment? With regards to evolution, well, this is where epigenetics comes in. And, you know, the third part of the question is, can we choose how we want to evolve? And absolutely, we can. And that's how we can change our, I wouldn't say it's the DNA, but more the expression of our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So how is that so? Because, you know, if we have certain behaviors, you know, or certain ways of being, how is it that we can, if we shift those, that we can choose? Obviously, everyone's not walking around thinking, well, I'll change my behavior so that we can change evolution, right? No one's thinking to that level. But everything that we do in our day, everything that we think is influencing the way that it impacts our DNA. And I say to clients all the time, our DNA is always listening. It's always listening. And depending on whether we're angry, upset, you know, with all the things that life brings us, how we react to life actually impacts the way we show up. And I believe that that is a critical factor in how we evolve individually and collectively.
I see. Thank you. So this could be the right time to talk about how we can change the expression of our DNA, or even rewrite it, as you say sometimes. So this is exactly what you've been focusing on for the last few years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've developed a method that can be used for a lot of things, from accessing the fountain of youth, which everybody is usually interested in, to dealing with things like emotional eating or even quantum manifestation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite bit, along with everything else, of course. So when we talk about wanting to rewrite or change the expression of our DNA, we have to firstly understand that there's so much more than meets the eye as to what can be influencing our DNA expression. And the second thing that we have to understand is that we are a technology inside of ourselves. You know, the human being is a technology. And that if we can learn to use this technology, no matter what is happening on the outside or inside, but if we can finesse it, we can move away from this place of victimhood to a place of empowerment. And when we learn this technology, what happens is that our DNA aligns to that. And as it aligns to that, as it's listening to our whole being, you know, I was talking about the upward causation, that if it's coming from consciousness down to supramental level, down to the vital body, which is a morphogenetic field which we live in, and that encompasses everything from our emotions to what our ancestors experienced, to what people around us are experiencing, to all of that, down to the mental body, and then the physical. So your physical body is always going to be representing what is in the other realms, like the vital body. I actually posted a quote on Facebook today, which I'm just going to go to because I think it's important connected to this. And this is what I said. It was from The Quantum Doctor, the book by Amit Goswami. And he says in there that the objection of dualism is no longer tenable once you invoke quantum thinking, and that consciousness can collapse simultaneously and non-locally. The possibility waves of all the bodies within consciousness, the physical, the vital, the mental, and the supramental. So what that's really saying in plain English terms is that everything's connected. And if we come from the place of consciousness, there's no wrong or right. It's actually when we get to that place, it all kind of collapses. And everything that we're experiencing comes into alignment with the truth of our being. And what is that? Like, you know, okay, so, you know, you could be talking about this forever. It's like, well, okay, but, you know, what is it? Well, what they found is that we are connected very much to nature. We're not apart from nature. And that we, you know, we resonate with nature, and nature has a frequency that is conducive for growth and wellness. Now, what they found was that the heart creates a field around us that responds very much to the same field that the plants around us and you know, everything around us corresponds to. And when we are experiencing certain emotions or, you know, experiencing life in a certain way that's taking us off balance, we're not matching up to this frequency of nature. And so that field that we create around us is what actually informs every cell in the body. That, for instance, the liver cell communicates with the brain cell, or the brain cell communicates with your toe, or the toenail communicates with, say, your kidney cell. How does that happen? Well, there's a field that's formed by the heart, and it's been studied with the Heart Math Institute, and anybody can go and check their website for all the studies that they've done on this. And they've even shown that how when 9/11 happened, just before it happened, they have these devices that have been checking this frequency around the planet. And when 9/11 was about to happen, before it happened, there was a big spike. And it was connected to the fact that there was this field that kind of knew this was going to happen. So everybody sensed it. So it's, you know, if you look at the full moon, it's like that kind of thing. Like, you know, people are more likely to get emotional around that time. Yeah. So there's all these connections, right? Yeah. So sorry, I keep talking, but I'm trying to get to. So really, we're connected, and this is how we can change our expression of the DNA.
Okay. So is it a good time to talk about your method a little bit or not? And then what kind of things can we change? Basically anything?
So, well, the method is really based on trying to teach people to understand their own technology, that we are, as a human being, we are frequency generators. And what we believe is going to create a certain frequency. And it's almost like if you put red sunglasses on or yellow sunglasses or green, you're going to see the world in a different way. And as you see the world in that different way, your DNA will respond to that. So the main thing about this technology is to understand that does what you're seeing create fear, or does it create harmony? So if anything's creating fear in your life, whether it's outside you or an emotional reaction or whatever it is, it goes into the fight-flight response. And that whatever we're experiencing is going to impact our nervous system. So most of us live in that place where we have, you know, it's like the hamster on the wheel. It's constantly chasing itself, not realizing that it is. And if you think about all the things in our life we have, that results in our nervous system being in the fight-flight response mode. And my method, really, the process is really to get people to understand that, getting the awareness that we are either one of those in particular situations in our life. That step in itself can change the expression of our DNA. Because most people are walking around with, you know, no awareness that they're even in that state.
Yeah.
So, and the process is really to get people to the place of freedom. And how do they get to that? They get to that because they learn the technology that allows them to be able to go from that awareness to freedom. And freedom means, you know, I have people, when they experience the method for themselves, it's actually the past. See, because most of us are, when we're running around the hamster wheel, the past is influencing the way we think, the way we act, the way we be. And it's, whether it's our belief systems of the past, our thoughts about it, as a result of it, of the beliefs that we're holding on to, all of that is creating a certain perception. And that's creating us, you know, and we continue just running around this hamster wheel. But the step of actually getting the awareness that we're doing it is the first and the hardest, and sometimes even the easiest, because once you realize, it's almost like you don't know it until you know it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like once they get the awareness, that can shift things. And so people listening right now, I mean, just take a check about how, when you wake up in the morning, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking? Is it already stepping into like what's not complete? What needs to be completed? What's not right in your life? You know, all these things, they're influencing the way your DNA shows up.
Yeah.
They get the awareness, then that is the first step towards recognizing the power that's within them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where things can change.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And then when you work with someone, it seems like it's affecting their DNA, but also the DNA of their ancestors. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah. So I know I mentioned about the study that they did with mice, and they saw that the mice, they could reverse that. You know, it came from the ancestors and then they reversed it. So we know from those studies that it is impacting the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
But from my work personally, I've had people that have done the work and then come back and said, my family member is completely changed. Like my dad's brother didn't get on with him. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's ringing and he's all back to normal with my dad, you know, or someone who's working with me with thyroid condition. And, when we worked on her, there was stuff that came up around the lungs. And it was ancestrally based. And when that was worked on, she said, oh, my dad and my sister have asthma. And then the next week in her session, she said, well, I just heard, you know, my dad didn't use his inhaler for a week. So it's things like that, that, you know, if we understand that output causation, that, you know, we have the supramental level, vital body, mental, and I'm going to keep saying that because I think it's really important, those levels and the physical level. If we just focus on the physical, we're not creating that shift. But when we go to the level of the quantum, where there's no time and space, where time doesn't exist, where there is the possibility of anything other than the present reality as well to show up. When we go to that, anything becomes possible. I've got a friend who can actually, who does, you know, work with the ancestors. And she lives in the US. And when I was working with her as practitioners, just getting together, having discussions, and we were doing this work, she said to me, she said, I can actually see the ancestors and them saying how they actually feel the benefits of this work. You know, and that's one thing, and we can get a bit woo-woo when we go into all of that. But the fact that present-day people saying, you know, their relatives are things improve, their moods improve around them, or, you know, I had somebody else that I was working with, and she said that, you know, her family members, suddenly everyone was getting on. So that's what can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. And something that I heard a long time ago is that for healing to be complete, you need to heal that thing in all your lineage. And that's something I heard from an alternative doctor a long time ago, which I did not fully understand at that time. But I think it's a little bit similar to what you're talking about.
Yeah, I would agree. But I would also like to add to that, because one thing is that we want to do that, but we have to understand that if you have a wheel, that we have to understand that we are the center of that wheel. And whether, you know, all those different spokes coming off the wheel, they are, say, one particular ancestral lineage in another or whatever, you know, and different things around in our life. But if we come to the center, we can act all of them. And so that's what this technology does, is that it allows us to get to the center, which then changes our physiology as a result of changing everything around us, including the ancestral. So it's not because we want to change the ancestral lineage, it's because we take responsibility for our present way of being. And that's the important point I would add to that.
Yes, thank you. You've seen many positive results in your work with your clients. Can you share a little more about that? You've already told us some stories. Is there anything else you would like to mention about that?
Yeah. So I had two women come to me, and they were both pregnant, and this was years apart. So it wasn't at the same time. And obviously, whatever I'm sharing, I have permission to share. One was in 2012, and the other was three, four years ago. Different parts of the world, and they both had been told at 3 months that their babies were diagnosed with Down syndrome because they showed significant nuchal edema, which was a marker for that. And obviously they had other tests as well to show that. Now, I have to say off right that I don't go into this work thinking that I can help any condition as such. My job is really, because I'm not a medical practitioner, my job is really to go in and work with, as I talked about, the upward causation, to go to that level of the quantum and do the work there, and then see what happens as a result. So with both of these, we did the work, and both babies were born normal. And when had the tests done, when the moms were about 9 months, that's when the babies were showing normal. And then they were born normal. they're both doing okay and well. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, that was two. And then I had a situation where I was asked to work on a girl who had cystic fibrosis, which is a genetic condition. And so for this, basically both parents need to have the mutation in order for it to manifest in the child. It's a recessive condition. And they came to me when she was around six, and she was diagnosed at birth. But now here's an interesting thing, because both parents decided, not out of ignorance, but more out of knowledge, to be careful about their beliefs around the condition and to not take on what the norm would be of it. So while she was growing up to the age of six or so, five or six, they didn't really talk about it. They were just treating her as normal, and she was doing okay. But around five or six, she started to get ill, and, you know, like I said, the prognosis was six for her to pass away. And so they came to me, and we started working on her. And she's now 11 or 12, and she's doing well. She's got a sister, and they're okay. She's okay. She gets the cold here and there, because what cystic fibrosis does is actually disrupt their immune system and creates a lot of mucus in the lungs. That leads to, you know, a lot of infections, and that's basically what gets them down. But she's doing okay.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So one question that I had is, can this method be used to deal with environmental issues and even heal the planet? Because as you know, there are a lot of things happening in the world affecting the planet that, you know, we feel we don't have much control over them. And is this method, can it be applied to those types of issues?
Well, this is a really important question, because the environmental issues are huge, and we have to acknowledge that. And we have to acknowledge, you know, that there is a lot going on the planet, with all the things that are going on. Whether we believe the conspiracy theories or if we believe in other things, it's all valid, right? We have to understand that. But I want to propose another way. And, you know, I started off by saying that my journey began to actually help people come out of that place of victimhood. Yeah. Now, when we believe what we believe, if we're looking at the upward causation model of consciousness, the vital body is encompassing the morphogenetic field of where our beliefs are coming from around, say, environmental issues. And that can influence our biology, but not only ours, but everybody else around us. So if we want to take a step of being a positive field, create a positive field in our environment, then we have to take another stance. There's got to be another way. And it's, you know, Einstein said you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it. Mm-hmm. So if there are sort of, you know, this environmental issues caused by certain people or, you know, the planet, whatever is going on, we have to understand that we're not going to change that from the same mind that created it, and that is from fear. Because on one level, what that's doing is that it's causing us to stay in that that place where we are in fear, and that's going to impact our nervous system, and that's going to impact our biology. And it's a vicious cycle that we keep, you know, perpetuating this cycle with this. And if it's going into the morphogenetic field, it's going to keep creating that. And with regards to healing the planet, that's the same. We can't help, you know, others from the place of fear. Now, this doesn't mean we ignore it, and then I'm not denying that. I'm saying that all these issues are very valid, but I like to propose another way. And I said to you, Brigitte, I wanted to read a little passage, just a paragraph from this book called Do Less, Achieve More, Discover the Hidden Power of Giving In. It's by Chin-Ning Chu. So I'll just read this quickly. Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud's premier student in the field of psychoanalysis, often spoke of the power of miracles by telling the following story. There was a village that had been experiencing drought for 5 consecutive years. Many famous rainmakers had been called, but they had all failed to make rain. In the village's last attempt, they called upon a renowned rainmaker from afar. And when he arrived in the village, he set up his tent and disappeared inside it for 4 days. On the 5th day, the rain started to fall and quenched the thirst of the parched earth. The people of the village asked the rainmaker how he had accomplished such a miracle. And the rainmaker replied, "I have done nothing." Astounded at his explanation, the villagers said, "How can that be? After you came, 4 days later, the rain started." And the rainmaker explained, "When I arrived, the first thing I noticed was that everything in your village was out of harmony with heaven." And just to add a note here, which is what I was saying about harmony with nature. So I spent 4 days putting myself into harmony with the divine, which is the supermental level. Then the rains came. So that's a powerful paragraph because it shows us that we are not to be disempowered by anything going outside of us. If we can learn this technology and get this awareness, that if we can tune ourselves to nature, we create a shift on a quantum level and in the morphogenetic field that begins to shift things around us quite dramatically. So that doesn't mean you don't take action, that, you know, you know, the firefighters don't fight, everyone's got to do what they've got to do. But what's important here is, can you become aware of what your thoughts are? Are they in harmony or are they in fear? Because if you're in fear, then you are creating and perpetuating that morphogenetic field that will continue to impact and you and others. But are you going to step into the place where you can actually shift what's in the morphogenetic field by coming into alignment within yourself? And as a result, things on the outside begin to change. Now, a lot of studies have been done on this with Lynn McTaggart. Anybody can look her up. She's got the Intention Experiment. There's a book.
Yeah.
And she's done a lot of work on showing how when collective groups of people get together, that's for collective groups. When I'm talking about a single person can shift the planet. And when we do it collectively, it can shift things even more, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very powerful. Thank you. And I think we can all reflect a little bit on this part. So now I wanted to ask you a personal question. Do you personally see a need to have your own DNA tested?
No, not absolutely not. Oh. I don't see a need for that because that's my personal choice. Anybody else can make their own personal choice. But I don't feel that that would tell me anything. What I know will tell me is my state of mind.
Yeah.
Because that's what changes my DNA expression.
Mm-hmm. Good. And then, of course, a lot of people are still going to want to have their DNA tested for whatever reason. But do you think that they should be concerned about privacy and data protection if they get tested? Have you heard anything about that? Do you have any recommendations?
No, I have not looked into this, so I can't really comment on any of that.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, again, it's a personal choice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I think we've, talked about a lot of things that I wanted to talk. Do you have any final thoughts on this discussion? And then also, if you can tell people how they can find you.
Well, I think if anybody can take anything away from this conversation, it's this, that you are a technology in yourself. And as soon as you get an awareness of that, that your compass is, are you in fear or are you in harmony? And now you can still be in harmony even though you're experiencing certain emotions, because we are human beings. We're still going to experience emotions. You're not going to be constantly blissed out. I mean, that's just not the way we are. But you can experience life if you were the center of the wheel. You can experience life when you come to that place. You can experience life from that place. And that has an impact on everything around you, your morphogenetic field. It shifts people around you, everything. So if people can get that, they can just come into awareness when they're recognizing, am I in fear or harmony? That will change your DNA expression. So that's really, really crucial. And people can find me on my website, sharonserda.com. And also I'm on Facebook and Instagram. I'm sharing regularly on there. And YouTube, you can check out my YouTube videos. I have a lot more there.
Okay, Sharon, thank you so much for talking with us today. I really hope, and I'm sure everybody who's listening will feel a little more empowered about their health, their well-being, and their life in general. I've worked with Sharon for about 6 months now as part of her Own Your Genome program and community. And I must say that Sharon and her program have been a wonderful new resource for me in my life. So Sharon, thank you. Thank you again very, very much for our discussion today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This is Brigitte Mouchet with the Solari Wellness Series. Thank you for listening and take good care of yourself, because it's more fun to be well.